This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I think everybody knows that I try to play bumper music that's appropriate for my guests. This would be angry music. So joining me are angry people. Although Tim's not angry, he's happy most of the time. He talks really fast, and so, but Jeff is straight up angry. And so Colonel Jeff Kenny, United States Marine Corps, retired, joins us now. Jeff, what's going on?
Nothing. Everything's good.
All right. Is the clock?
I punched the bag for six rounds this morning, so I wouldn't be so mad today.
Attaboy. Is the clock on or off today?
The clock is, according to my wife, it's off, but she's been known to, like, lie to get out of stuff. So, and she's not here right now.
Well, then no wonder you're trash-talking like you are.
Right. If it starts chiming, I'll just start singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic real loud, and you won't notice.
You won't notice the clock. All right, Tim. Tim Lynch, Major, United States Marine Corps. Major's backbone of the Marine Corps. Retired. What's going on down there in McAllen, Texas? The one of the founders of the latest of a series of Marine Detachment League posts that have opened. So, what's the name of your detachment?
Rio Grande Valley.
I mean, don't you have to have a name for it though? Like the
Rangers.
Yeah, we've got no names or anything like. We're just the RGV detachment. Haven't been around long enough to establish a good reputation like that.
Well, we don't care about your reputation. Don't you have to have a name though? I mean, the Harlan Block. How do you like that? I went Harlan Block on your ass.
Nah, man. Rio Grande Valley. Actually, it says RGV.
Okay, look, I don't want to tell you how to run the detachment, but Harlan Block or RGV? What would I go for? Let me bring somebody in that's unbiased. Kenny, what do you think?
I think they should call them the Texas Brush Poppers. Based from True Grit, if you remember the Rooster Cogburn guy. Calls the guy, I never heard one of you Texas brush poppers say you had a big fire. You always talk about your little fires. So, brush popper. I'm not sure what it means, but it's probably good.
Is that right before when he says, arm yourself, Ned? And then Ned Pepper calls him.
Fill your hand, you son of a bitch.
That sounds like bold talk from a one-eyed fat man.
Me and my dad drinking.
Wait, say that again.
Fill your hand, you son of a bitch, and I call that.
No, hold on, Kenny. Kenny, shut up. Lynch was supposed to talk again.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tim.
No. What do you say? Brush toppers?
Brush poppers.
I like it. I'm gonna put that in. I'm gonna make a motion in the next meeting.
Well, you have to.
There you go. Brush poppers.
Go watch. Hey, watch the movie True Grit. John Wayne's in it. In case you've never seen it, I want to talk about a series of. You guys watch PTI? Pardon the interruption. It's just kind of a sports show, but it has smart people on it instead of stupid people. Michael Wilpon writes for the Washington Post, and Tony Kornheiser, kind of funny intellectual guys.
Right.
But they do this thing where they talk about a topic, and then when they get to the time limit, like the buzzer sounds. Right? And they go on to the next one. So I want to kind of do that today, because sometimes we get lost in a subject, okay? So first topic, your thoughts on the killing of four Americans in Syria last week. Jeff, I say manbij. How do you say that?
Me too, manbij.
Okay. All right. I think, and I'll preface the discussion with this. One of the first things you learn that I learned in Iraq was if you set a pattern, somebody will bust it off in your ass. And so in reading about that, I don't know if those rules don't apply or they didn't think they applied in Manbij. But in reading about it, I was kind of surprised that at this late date that we're still doing things like that. Jeff, your thoughts?
Well, it was a V-bid that hit them, and it's like, I mean, a V-bid, it's almost like a...
Hold on. So it was...
A vehicle-borne IED.
You didn't fucking explain that to me, did you? You explained the acronym to me? Are you shitting me?
To everybody who's... you're always having me explain my acronyms and my weird expressions for you.
All right. So the fireball told you that there was some kind of fuel or something else involved in it. It wasn't a suicide. All right. But there doesn't appear... So nobody drove, so it was parked outside the restaurant? Is that what detonated?
I think so. From what I read, yeah.
Right.
It was all open source. I don't have any other access as far as that, you know, that particular...
Got it. All right, so are you surprised that the...
No, I'm surprised there's not more of them. You know, that's only the second incident we've had that caused casualties, I think, in Syria since we got in there in 15, if I'm not mistaken.
And they just had another IED go off on a variant of an MRAP, a commercial variant of an MRAP. I don't know, a few hours east of Manbij. So it looks like ISIS message sending. Oh, you think we're defeated? Which to me is kind of stupid, because if I was them, I would have said, hey, don't do anything. Let's build ourselves up. Let the Americans leave, and then we'll get after the Syrians. That's what I would have thought. Tim, were you surprised reading that? I mean, I said this earlier today. Nobody that I've ever seen is as good at suicide bombing as the Sunnis were. That is an art form, and they can do it like nobody's business. And it was, in my opinion, the biggest difference between Iraq and Afghanistan on a daily basis is in Iraq, when you left, you gripped it. Because every vehicle, every person that walked up to you was potentially going to explode. And that was because of the effectiveness of you know, and the number of their suicide bombings. So, question to you, were you surprised that happened?
Well, I'm kind of surprised that they're rolling out meeting the alleged sources and whatnot in MRAPs. I mean, it's a lot safer to move through those areas in local cars and local clothes and keeping a low profile. I mean, that's the problem, is that the technology protected the troops inside. That's amazing. But what the hell are you going out of the MRAP for? I mean, that's just nuts. I wouldn't do it. And I'm surprised we're still doing it.
All right. Any other thoughts on that event, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like with Tim on this one, because, like, if you actually had enough personnel, and I got 2,000 folks spread over a huge area there, but right. If you had enough personnel to make finding V-bids and stuff like that, you know, one of your main TTPs, and you wouldn't put your important people in them MRAP. You put those guys out there, you know, MRAP out there moving, and then you'd focus on whoever was focusing on it. I mean, if you know what I mean. And, you know, if that's the case, but my guess is, you know, that's ISIS, you know, that's the Kurdistan area, you know, that's a sign of you're on your ass if you're doing V-bids and you're doing suicide bombers and stuff.
Yeah.
ISIS didn't used to do that when they were rampantly pushing through Syria and then into Iraq. But now they do, because they have nothing left except you know, a few people that they managed to either coerce or persuade to go ahead and do these things.
Right.
You know, I don't like them, obviously. You know, I hate them. But, you know, you hear the word coward, this is a cowardly act. It's anything but a cowardly act. Maybe it's a foolish act. You know, it's certainly an evil act. But, you know, you can't underestimate the fact that these guys are bone deep enraged at, you know, a series of things that manifest itself in having a lot of people who seem to be willing to offer it all up in order to kill Americans or, you know, or American allies.
Yeah, you know what? There never seems to be any shortage of them, you know, as opposed to life in Afghanistan, where it was, fairly rare that you would see that. Tim, any other any other thoughts on the Manbij thing and whether ISIS is attempting to flex its muscle now in response to the American, you know. You know, at least insinuate, not overt insinuation or pronouncement that that ISIS is done.
Well, ISIS isn't done. I mean, they're not done in Yemen. They're not done up in the Nangarhar province in Afghanistan. And I don't believe we've ever claimed they were completely done to begin with. But like Jeff said, that may be a desperate act because they don't have anything else going for them. But they're not done. And we're in this period of durable conflict where these areas are going to be, I mean, these conflicts are just going to go on and on and on. And how do you operate in those areas is what we're not seeming to figure out, because always going in with the MRAPs and the big force package, that's not the best way to do it, I don't believe.
Well, let me make the distinction. The MRAP incident happened yesterday. The bombing, I don't know, in the restaurant, I don't believe that if you look at the people that were involved, I would have been surprised if they would have rolled downtown in an MRAP. They'd look like they were other actors. But to me, using the same place repeatedly in that part of the world where you know that there are other actors there, to me, it just kind of raised an eyebrow that said, you know what, it's kind of like I feel when I was at the time, I think it was a Brigadier General, Nicholson's house for dinner, and we were in Fallujah together in 2006, and he showed me a picture of Marines with no PPE on, painting curbs yellow in Ramadi, getting ready for a 10K run that they were going to hold. And my response was, I can't even, if that's Ramadi, I don't even want to look at the picture because I'm afraid the picture is going to explode. Because I just don't believe it. And a similar experience leaving, I can't remember when it was, we're in buses going to the, I think, Ali As-Salam era. So we were going to the international airport from Ali As-Salam to fly back to the United States. So we're in buses, right? Everybody that's flying back. And stopped off to the side of the road is this gigantic, shiny gas tanker truck, right? And the driver's standing outside on the traffic side, talking on his cell phone with his white man dress and his red and white helmet on. And my stomach just turned in a knot and said, oh, my God, I can't believe this shit's going to happen. And we drove by it, and nothing happened. And I was sitting there on the bus, and I said, was I the only one that just almost puked? And, right, everybody started laughing, like, no, I thought the same fucking thing. So, anyway.
You know, that's the conundrum of this type of conflict, because a good way to get intel and find bad guys, one of the best ways is to do a MedCap, DenCap.
Right.
But in order to be accessible to people who need that stuff, you're going to have to make yourself a little bit vulnerable. And so you get valuable intel, but at the same time, you're a prime target for a V-bid or an attack of some kind, or even just a guy with a suicide vest. And, you know, so it's but yet, that's what works. And that's why they attack it. That's why they'll try and make, you know, the people, the average folks, you know, you got a kid who's been screaming for 2 months because he's got an impacted tooth, and an American comes along, shoots some fucking Novocaine in there, pulls the tooth out. The guy's willing to vote for fucking Richard Nixon if he's still alive, you know, because he's so grateful. But however, to make that accessible so it's effective, you got to expose yourself to some vulnerability. In a way, it's kind of like if you really want to take a chance on doing an offensive op, whether it's in a boxing ring and you're going to throw a big punch, or whether you're in a company doing an assault, you're going to have to. There's going to be a moment of, you know, of several moments of prime exposure, and without that gamble, you won't have any return. But it could also just turn into a catastrophe for you.
No,
so it's
in a heartbeat.
It's a hard thing to countenance. But if you don't do any of that, Then you'll just be guys riding around in Humvees and MRAPs telling people what's what, get off the side of the road or I'll shoot a pop-up at you.
Right.
You know, and they, and that doesn't work either, you know, so it's very hard.
You know, we did a, I want to say it happened up in Dave Furness's battle space in a city by the name of Karma, which is north of Fallujah, and we did a, we did like a medical contact team, and you didn't see this done very often, but they flew in every female doctor and nurse in the region into Fallujah, right? We had all the security and took them up to Karma, because I don't know, they were trying to, they thought they could turn somebody and bring them to the good side. And they did this medical day for women. And it was our female doctors, so they would be able to, you know, see and care for women. Most of these women had never seen a doctor in their life. And the goodwill that got generated that, and I, so I talked to the Marines, so, you know, so this is coming on, you know, you have it supported, you have ISR overhead, because you're scared shitless that somebody's going to walk in the middle of this thing and explode. And so you're on pins and needles all day. And so you talk to the security element, and you're talking to them all day. How's it going? They came back, and you see them, and nothing happened. It was like, how'd it go? And these are Marines, right? And infantry Marines. And, like, sir, it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen in my life. Really? Like, so you would not have believed. Women crying all day. You know, they had basic infections. They had different things that were easily taken care of by our doctors. And they were so grateful. I mean, you couldn't help but get tears in your eyes when you saw some of this stuff. And it's just said, like, basic dental things and things like that all got, quote-unquote, cured that day by the Americans. And but the whole time you're there, right, you're on pins and needles because the bad guys hate that shit.
Your stomach's in knots.
Right, because it's horrible.
You're waiting to hear that. And in Iraq, there's no Arabic word for suicide bomber. They just go, suicide bomber, suicide bomber. And Afghanistan, they got a Dari word and they got a Pashtun word. But so when you hear that, your fucking asshole slams shut, right. You know?
Right. And they were, I mean, your experiences with them, Jeff, did you ever get hit by a VBID or were yours just IEDs?
No, IEDs for me, total. That was, and they were so, they're really good at it. You know what I mean? Like, they have one around Haditha. There's like a road around Haditha, and, they killed, Sergeant Jorgensen. He was a EI company when I was a director of IOC. He was their mortar section guy. You know, one of those master mortarmen.
Right.
And, he made staff sergeant. He had some legal problems, and I remember getting in my alphas and going to his, thing. Me I think it was, I can't remember, it was Greeley or fucking, Gibby. Remember Gibson? But anyways, we went and,
I just saw Trent, one of his Marines.
Yeah, ask him about it, he'll remember it. I think it was Trent.
One of his Marines committed suicide.
Yeah, shit. Terrible.
Yep.
But, anyway, this kid, Jorgensen, made staff sergeant, and, Norm Cooling's PSD leader. Norm's battalion was 3-3. He was there in Haditha. And they put an obvious IED. I mean, that you would see there's some kind of disturbance. And so he fucking stopped the convoy, and he got out to do his 5 and 25, and they had a command detonated one there, and they killed him. About a week before I got hit by the IED that made me get medevaced. But so they were very... They use a combination of technical expertise and tactical savvy of watching us and how we did stuff, you know?
Yeah, I will tell you what. I mean, if you watched them and paid attention to what they do, they watched us every second of the day. And every time they would do that stuff, it always came with a distractor.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have 360 security, you got your ass kicked. You got your ass absolutely kicked because they were good at it. They understood maneuver warfare, and they knew how to get close to you, and then how to distract, and then as you can imagine, everybody listening, when you talk about the amount of ordnance that you could put into just an Opel sedan, fill up the trunk, fill up the back seat, you were talking about a gigantic explosion, gigantic, And so that's why, I mean, sad when, in retrospect, the number of civilians that got killed, that got close to, you know, coalition units, because the coalition units scared shitless, right? And they're ignoring what they're telling. They're not slowing down when you're waving. You shoot the, they shoot the pen flares. That's where all that shit came from.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep coming.
Escalation of force. Yeah.
Right. And it was horrible. Tim, did you ever, you were in Baghdad, so you were living the big life. Did you guys ever do any, you know, were you ever experienced any suicide bomber shit?
Yeah, no, we had rockets hit our camp and lost a few guys to rockets. And there were a couple times when there were suicide bombers right outside of the green zone where, as the medical guy, because I was like the temporary medical guy for 2 months, I would roll out with everybody else's medical guy and start treating the local civilians. But my runs up and down the Irish, I was in local clothes and a local cost. And we would go up Irish to go to get the stick in Burger King, which is kind of insane. But yeah, I was happy to get the hell out of Baghdad. That was a bad place.
Yeah.
You know, I just remembered, and God rest his soul, the other guy who was in there with him was John Maloney. He was the EI weapons platoon commander before we brought him up to IOC.
John Maloney is killed in Ramadi. In Ramadi in 2005 with First Eric Smith and First Battalion Fifth Marines. The email question, Mac. I just heard 5 and 25s. What does that mean?
Okay, well, what it is, it's like when you're in a dangerous place and you think there might be IEDs and you stop. Whether you stop for whatever reason, when we're in Iraq, particularly between 2004 and like 2000, I think when they left probably. You look outside the vehicle for like 5 meters around to see if there's any obvious disturbance. And then when it's safe enough, you get out. And then you do a larger perimeter search that's 25 meters roughly around the vehicle. And that's the way I understand 5 and 25. We did that all the time.
So it's just a way to clear your surrounding
killed.
Area.
Yeah.
But you know what, General Mattis loved those kind of terms. I mean, he was doing the kind of like advertising slogans and tag words that chunked information for Marines. And you know,
right.
Guardian angels, no better friend, no worse enemy.
Mm-hmm.
First, do no harm. And so he loved that stuff. He'd go looking for it.
I remember that no better friend, no worse enemy. Paul Kennedy, I think, came up with that. Me and him were talking, and he said, who's this Roman guy? Because that's from a Roman guy who was around Caesar's time. He was Caesar's uncle. His name was Lucius Cornelius Sulla, and he was a badass. And when he on his tomb, when he died, it said, you know, here lies whatever, and no better friend, no worse enemy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to put on your tomb.
Yeah.
On your grave, right?
Right.
Do you have any? What do you think you're gonna? What are you gonna have on your grave, Jeff?
Of all the people in this cemetery, I'm one of them.
There you go. Something truly not so novel. Tim, what about you on your headstone? What do you think you're gonna have put on there?
I don't have any idea.
Well, you better figure it out, or else we're going to decide, and you don't want that.
Right now, I'd go with armed humanitarian. That was my favorite kid.
Yeah,
armed humanitarian. Another email, Mac. I'd be curious when you introduced who was coming on earlier today. You mentioned that Mr. Lynch had served in the Navy. You were pretty hard on the Navy last week. I don't think I was. Is being honest hard? If being honest is hard, then so be it. I'd be curious about what each of them has to say about the report, if they read it, and the state of the American Navy. Doc Lynch, you want to go first on that deal?
And my sentiments echo your outrage that you expressed all last week. I read those articles and they're unbelievable. But my question is, Okay, so clearly they weren't focused on like seamanship and driving ships. What the hell was that command focused on? What was it they were doing back then that allowed this kind of a level of dysfunctionality to fester at the plate level? I've never heard of such a situation. To me, it's beyond bizarre. So what the hell was it they were focused on? That would be interesting to know.
All right, so just to establish this as fact, your dad was an infantry officer in the Marine Corps, and you decided to join the Navy. Can you explain that to everybody so we can understand that?
Oh, I did a couple of years. Yes, I had it in my mind that what I really wanted to do was a SEAL. And when I signed up, for a 6-year contract, instant petty officer, to guarantee me a C school, because my recruiter said, that's how you get to SEAL school. And I had no problems passing the in-doc. It was pretty easy. I don't have television, so I can't pass a time physical. So that was never an option for me. I just did 6 years, and I was pissed, too. And I ended up going to become an advanced laboratory technician in the C school that I ended up being sent to.
Okay, so there you have it. That's the whole story. Did you ever serve aboard ship?
So after the Beirut bombing, the medical surgical team out of Newport, Rhode Island, and I was on that. I was a leading petty officer as a second class.
LPA.
We got mobilized and got aboard an LPH. It was with Kuwait, the guys that came in after Grenada. So I was off the coast of Beirut. I actually went ashore a couple times. But I was off the coast of Beirut for like 5 months as part of the surgical team. And whenever you read, Mike Etosh thing about Beirut and his guy that he lost, we were the guys that received that. I remember that. I remember that night very well. Because we had to pick up all the wounded, and we had to package up and all the remains for the transport. And that's a long drawn out process. But I remember that well. Yeah.
All right. Jeff, any thoughts on the USS Fitzgerald and that investigation that came out? And then the ALNAV that got sent out, on Friday, that said, hey, boys and girls, when we deep six something, we don't expect to be reading in the newspaper, so you better watch your back.
Let me tell you, my bona fides a little bit on this. I was on one MAL and four MUs embarked.
Ooh.
And so my total embark time is almost 2.5 years. On and off these amphibs between 1980 and 2005. And then I was that's what we call expeditionary ops training group officer in charge as a colonel, my last assignment on active duty. And I was on four times I went on ship, during their workups. So I watched the Navy go from how they were in 1980 to how they were in 2017. And, what happened through the years is the COs really became focused, in my opinion, on the command climate survey stuff that would come down. And on ship, a ship can really be either a very high morale place or it can be a toxic low morale place. And I think they're so worried about that sometimes it results in them not wanting to enforce discipline. And I think that might be what happened there. You don't want these guys bitching about you in their command climate surveys. And another thing is the demographics of the ship are rife with females now. So a lot of times the captain of a ship doesn't know how to handle this. Either he's too solicitous of the females, which pisses off the guys, or he ignores them, which pisses them off. Either way, it results in the same thing. Shitty comments on the command climate survey. And if you got enough of them, you'll get relieved. Or at least you'll get, you won't be a hero. You won't be another Farragut or a Decatur, even though those guys didn't give a shit about that stuff.
Hey, Matt, can I add something, too? Because Jeff is on something. So real quick, I wanted to plug, I write at the Freak Weekly, put up a weekly Afghan update, and I recently put up an article on the post-traumatic warning, And in that article, I embedded a graphic that showed a 187% increase in hospitalizations for young girls between the ages, I believe it was, at 10, 9 and 11, right?
What?
And if you go look at that article, you'll see that graph, and you'll see this gigantic increase. It started in 2011. I mean, just through-the-roof increase. And that's because of social media, because young girls, when they fight, they're destroying each other's reputation. There's no increase in young boys, right? Because they fight.
Okay, hold on. So this is a statistic. Hold on. I just wanted to find the statistic. It's in the general American population, hospitalizations of 11-year-old girls?
Yeah. Pull up the post I wrote about on the radio. I put that in there for a reason, basically to connect the trauma piece to not being post-combat. But when you look at that, now hold on a second. Listen to, because now this is a problem with young girls that we've got to deal with at some point. It's alarming. But when you look at that at the investigation and the CIC officer and the bridge officer aren't talking to each other, communicating, you see, guys can hate each other, but if one of them is supposed to be in the CIC and the other one's supposed, they're still going to talk, because that's not how they, that's not how they do interpersonal aggression. And I'm telling you, there's something there embedded in all that that nobody really wants to talk about, because we don't know what the rules are when it comes to males and females on a ship. What are the rules? I mean, you know, that's a hell of a social experiment to be thrown out there.
Yeah, but the Navy, this is not like it's a new experiment. We've all watched the Navy going into the shitter. It's not, you know, but I'll tell you what, when I read those articles, I mean, and I'm yelling at Jeff Zazulowitz when I'm interviewing him, right? I'm brushing his ass like it's his fault. You know, the excuse is that equipment doesn't work. We sailed the ocean's blues for a couple, a couple of hundred years without any of that shit. So when it goes down, can we not, you know? And if we don't have that shit, driving at 20 knots at night across the ship, do you think that's fucking smart? I'm not even a surface warfare officer, and my dumbass can figure that out. And so it's like,
have a lookout up there.
Are we that fucked up that we can't figure this shit out? And again, to me, the classic. 100-hour work week. Shit. 14 hours a day deployed or at sea means you have 10 free hours a day. Are you shitting me? So,
yeah, but yeah. No, it's 20 miles an hour. 20.
You got
to flying out there. I can't imagine. Can't imagine.
But I don't know. I don't know. So, Jeff, you were going to say something.
Well, I was just saying, you know, the other thing, since we started putting the women on the ships, I don't know how many of them went home early because they got pregnant. And that's against the rules. You're not supposed to screw on the ships. Yet they do, you know, and the same thing on the FOBs, those big FOBs in Iraq or Afghanistan. The girls go home when they get pregnant because it's like being a casualty. What happens to them?
Are you going to do, NJPM?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I want to be. Hey, I want to be around for. I want to be around for that.
That's what I mean, and it's ridiculous, man. It's a military organization. You got people fucking. So I mean, how can that be mutually exclusive? You know what I mean? I mean, you just can't have it.
No, you're right. I mean,
like drinking on the ship. You can't be drinking on the ship either. You know, it's like.
It's contrary to good order and discipline, but. We can't.
Yeah, that's a good quote. I got to remember that.
But you can't even discuss that.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, no, you're right.
That's exactly the point.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think if it would have been two guys in the CIC and the other one's the officer of the deck, that the guy who's the officer of the deck would have got a punitive letter of reprimand for an incident that killed seven sailors?
I think he would have got more than that.
No. Oh, yeah, yeah. The guy was definitely a general clerk. I mean, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, right.
Right.
There's dead people here.
She's portrayed in the articles that get written about her. She's portrayed, her name's Sarah Kopic, Lieutenant JG. She's portrayed as a victim in all of this. Like, I got it. Like, sometimes shit's not perfect around you, but your job, the oath you swear, right, is to take care of those that you have been appointed over. And that's a life oath. And am I mean, and now you see, like, oh, she feels terrible for the rest of her life. Why was she going 20 fucking knots at night? If she wasn't comfortable, there's a standing order. Wake up the CO or the XO, because those two dumb fucks aren't on the bridge for some
every
reason.
Every CO I saw from the I never saw a CO who wasn't paranoid about what the fuck was going on, on board the ship as far as the, especially the bridge, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of places on the ship that will get you in trouble like the bridge will get you in trouble.
Right. Okay,
but, I mean, in the story that Zulowitz wrote, in 78 nights at sea, he had only been on the bridge after 2200 four times. Because they logged that shit. CO's on the bridge, CO's off the bridge.
Look at the Navy did to Lloyd Bucher. Oh. He was this commander of the Pueblo that got taken by the North Koreans in 69. They castigated that guy.
Yeah.
The guy who was in charge, the captain of the ship... It was Spruance's flagship, USS Indianapolis. It got sunk bringing the atom bomb from Titinian. I can't remember where they came from, but they brought the bomb.
From the Philippines.
And his name was, it was like a McCain type name, but that's not right. But, that guy got court-martialed too. He ended up committing suicide. I mean, these guys did everything right, but because something bad happened to their ship, the Navy wasn't going to let it go. Basically, the Navy says, hey, the worst crime you can commit is bad luck. But let me tell you, that's bad, but that's what you need to have, that type of thing where a guy, he is dedicated to his job because he is responsible for that ship and every person on that ship. He doesn't just worry about if someone's going to feel like I'm being too mean to him. And then write a fucking letter to somebody or put on the command climate survey that I'm a dick. And then all of a sudden they lost confidence in me. Oh, they got confidence for that you'll put something on the deck who blindly plows through the night at 20 knots, but without watching, without even having a lookout out there when the systems fail. You know, that's okay, but we don't want to be rude.
Yeah.
It's not worth being rude.
And that guy in Indianapolis, the Japanese sub commander that sunk him, sent a letter after the war trying to clear his name.
Right.
You're the captain, ship went down, hundreds of guys got hit by the sharks.
Right.
You're done. And that's the way you used
to. Wait, hold on. Lynch, you moved. Your connection sucks. What'd you fucking do?
No. I just, I'm walking on the push. I'm back in the, out of the way.
Well, whatever you did isn't working for me, okay? Now I'm the quality assurance. Now I'm the quality assurance bitch. Nice.
I'm back out of the wind.
Nice. Well, we appreciate it. We appreciate it. But it's layer after layer after layer of this stuff, and and they weren't even going to send the CIC officer. They were down there like. If you're not prosecuting the air, surface, and the subplots in the CIC, what are you doing?
You're doing, yeah.
That's what they do. What are you doing? So there's greedy on the plexiglass board, so they're not doing that, right? And then they found what food, and piss bottles down there, and evidently a bunch of papers that she was working on at the time of the incident, and so. They're not engaged in the driving of the ship. And you're like, okay, so that doesn't work. The equipment's not functioning. Like, what works on this ship? And at what point does somebody fire the Brown Star cluster and say, what the hell, right? What the hell?
Yeah.
It's pretty disturbing. Pretty disturbing.
You get relieved just for that.
Shit. Not even, I mean, that. Okay, let me ask you, this is a military justice question. Okay, so. The OOD gets a letter of reprimand or some bullshit, right? And she quits the Navy. The CIC watch officer, she's going to court-martial, but the recommendation was she not be court-martialed. So the two primary people that were responsible for driving the ship that night, neither one of them is going to face a court-martial. Okay, and the battalion commander at Parris Island, right, in the Siddiqui case, the gunny goes to jail for 10 years. The company commander, I've never even read shit about him or her. Right? And the battalion commander, he has a $2,000 fine, and then they're going to do a board of inquiry over on him to see if he'll retire as a major or a lieutenant colonel. And the regimental commander was given amnesty. Like, how come officers
don't...
Yeah. Amnesty so he could testify. Immunity. Immunity, I'm sorry.
Oh, immunity.
As was amnesty. As was the sergeant major was given immunity as well.
That's disgusting.
Right.
Officers getting immunity. Holy shit. That's just awful, man.
So, do you think you'd get somebody attention if you sent an officer to the brig for 6 months?
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Absolutely.
But it never happens. Officers held to a different, lighter standard of justice. That gunny's got four, he's got four daughters. He's going to the brig. They recommended 7 years. He got 10.
Now, what did he do? Is he the one who actually put the guy in the dryer?
Yeah, he's the one. But, I mean, come on. That's funny. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let me tell you what's not funny. The Muslim thing isn't funny. When we're at war, that isn't funny. And that he had no business going there. But putting somebody in a dryer, you guys have both seen it. Tell me that's not funny.
No, but what I'm saying is that guy actually did this stuff, and then
yes.
he didn't go telling. He didn't tell the battalion commander. No one told the battalion commander. Hey, he should have been checking his company commanders, and then they in turn would be checking hard on their series commanders to make sure that shit didn't happen.
Evidently he was still under investigation, hadn't been cleared from previous allegations of harassing, and the battalion commander knew that, but they were short bodies. And was it you, Jeff, who explained it to me, or Tim, or somebody who said the reason that shit happens at Parris Island is because MCRD is closer to Pendleton, so that's just a PCA, so they're always staffed at 100% or more. Parris Island is a PCS move, which costs money, so they're constantly short.
No, that wasn't me, but that sounds like something that, did you have, Dave would know about that shit.
Yeah, Mellinger. Yeah,
Mellinger. Mel would, he lived that at Parris Island.
Yeah, because I did know that.
Did he tell you, Tim? And then, but that sounds right to me. That's about because they cross section because Edson Range is real. Most of their business is privates coming up from boot camp.
I just don't look different standard of justice for officers. And again, I misdemeanor stuff I don't even care about. Okay,
right.
But when we're talking about high crimes. Then, to me, you want to send a message, and I remember talking to Tim's dad about the Siddiqui thing, and he said, hey, look, the reason it happens is because you're not getting out there and watching. And
right.
You don't know your hats by their first name, or not by their first name, but you don't know them by name.
Right.
They don't know you. And he said, look, my aide was one of the most hated guys on the island because people would come up and call up and say, hey, what's the old man doing today? Can't tell you. He'll be around.
Well, Tim's dad. Tim's dad is the first one. Tim's dad was like General Scipio Africanus in Rome. He destroyed Pittsburgh the way Scipio destroyed Carthage and plowed it underneath a furrow and plowed salt in the furrow so nothing would ever grow. Because that guy was neglecting all the fraud and abuse that was going on in Pittsburgh. 88 or something. That's when the first guy got fired. And Tim's dad was a CG there, or was it 89? I don't know, Tim. When was your dad the...
it was 89, 90, right in there.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And then nobody survived again until I got there in 97. And I was like, my asshole was slammed shut tight. I'm thinking, holy shit, maybe they'll bring Tim's dad back to fire me, because he didn't fire me when he was a colonel and I was a staff sergeant, But...
But that's true. Jeff went to Pittsburgh, and everybody's like, "Oh man, that's no bueno," because everybody that's gone to Pittsburgh has gotten fired.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's an email, Matt. Could I stop you guys for a second because you just mentioned Carthage? Where the hell is Carthage?
It's Tunis.
Oh.
Tunis, Tunisia.
Yeah. If you look at it on the map. There's a huge bay in Tunis.
Right.
And it's, if you go, like south of Rome. If you drive almost due south of Rome, actually it would be south southwest technically. But if you drive right into this gigantic bay, which would have been Carthage. So yeah, tuna.
Right.
Interesting. Another email. So as a former enlisted guy who's never understood this, why don't they lay the wood to officers?
Well, it's not fair. You know, they should. Like, for instance, there's an officer now, a colonel, who was a contemporary of mine, and I think Tim's, who got caught molesting a little girl at Lejeune
right
before I retired. That guy is never going to get out of jail, I don't think. I don't know if I don't know if there's any difference in that actual crime. But if you're talking about responsible, you know, it isn't fair. Officers get more medals and higher medals, and they don't, you know, it seems like they don't pay the price. Although it's kind of murky when you're talking about a, you know, you're trying to, you have guys in your command. Should you be held accountable for that crime? I don't know. You know, it's like they held Chris Stillings, who was the CO of OCS, responsible because there was a murder in his command. Yet there was a murder in the command down in around the same time, a horrific murder where a guy and his wife, staff sergeant and his wife, were murdered it was Riverside, but they were stationed in Miramar, and these two guys came up, and so the guy was relieved of command for OCS, which is basically a love triangle turned into a murder. Then they had a premeditated murder and arson where they burned the house, and yet they didn't fire that guy. So, you know, I mean, should the guy be put in jail because his guy's committed a crime?
No.
Or is
the only reason he should be, the only reason he should be put, in my opinion, and you could only throw him in a brig for, I don't care, 60 days, 90 days.
Right.
You want to hear some asshole slamming shut around the Marine Corps or the Navy,
mm-hmm.
you know? Throw up an end. Throw it somebody's head. And,
yeah.
and send a message that when we say everything your unit does or fails to do, you're responsible for. You know?
Then the units will stop doing stuff, Mike.
Well, I mean, here's the deal.
What happened is the guy will be – most guys are cowards. Most people are. That's why we prize a brave guy so highly, not because bravery – real bravery is a rare thing, like a diamond. But the average person responds with fear when he's terrorized by higher up. So if higher up says you will be punished for every crime your guys are, you know, commit, no matter how unreasonable it is, what they will do then is they will not allow people to have authority at their own levels, and they will micromanage the shit out of their people. And you'll have the Russian army. You'll have the Russian army in 1982 or whatever, you know. It won't be good.
But you have to be able to hold them accountable for their negligence. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, you know, it happened, you were
negligence
standing there.
Negligence is what it is, right.
Right. And so, but if you're culpable, like, for instance, if that investigation was going on, the one question that matters at this court-martial, were you aware of the unclosed nature of this investigation? Yes, I was. All right. Thank you. We're done with you. Goodbye.
Right.
Right? And at that point, then, in my opinion, he has to get hammered. And he has to get hammered. And I learned this from General Mattis because my way is kind of a little bit more personal, you know, blah, 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 blah. But the 1st Marine Division in 2004 performed at a pretty high level all throughout the Al-Anbar province. And it was because he scared the shit out of the average guys. They were mm-hmm. terrified that if, when chaos showed up, if their shit wasn't in one sock, he was going to fire them, and he would. And just right, the average guys, they respond to that. The good guys will always be good. The good women will always be good. And so the question is, you know, how do you move that middle third of your core or of your group? And so Mattis would do it by fear, and let me tell you, I watched it. I thought, well, that's not really my style. But you have to admit, and I then began to understand that term: no attrition, no morale. Right? The weak and the shitty have to go away, so that everybody else pulls a little bit harder, and you can do more without them. And morale goes up. And so, but I just don't, the officer justice thing bothers me. That guy, if he knew, and by all accounts he did, that guy wasn't supposed to be there, and he had him there, and then that kid dies, you got to go to the brig, son.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Matt, the other thing is it's not, we're not consistent in that. You know, because I don't think the two generals that lost their jobs over the loss of that Harrier attack on Bastion, I don't think that was
the wrong general. You're right.
Holding them accountable was nonsense. That was posh on the Commandant's level, in my opinion, and that's good for morale. But we don't consistently do this across the board. There are places where, like Mattis, we're leaving the 1st Marine Regiment CO when he was not performing. There are places where, you know, punishment is fast and true. Other places where they're not, because we're all humans. And like Jeff said, you know, you're really, really good, aggressive, natural leaders. That's like pulling a diamond out of a goat's ass. Not every guy in the job has the ability to do the job well. And the system doesn't function in the absence of a weak, in the presence of weak leadership. It just won't.
Right.
So what's your point in all that? Should they go to the brig or not?
Well, that's why you have judges, because the judges exercise judgment. So you can't have a one size fits all thing. You know, you got to look at the case and see, you know, what's appropriate, what's not. I know that when Lieutenant Cole Robeson was a CO 3-2 when I was in 3-8, and they're the guys who lost Rother.
Right.
And he paid brutally. His brother became a general, and he paid. Not only did he pay brutally from the Marine Corps, I mean, General Gray personally is pissed about that.
Right.
I mean, personally pissed at the guy. And this guy retired as lieutenant colonel, and he had a farm in North Carolina, and he was plowing. This is like right after he retired, and there was an accident, and the plow tipped over, and his kid was impaled on the plow. Like this, it was like one of those rake type things.
Yeah.
Went into his kid's abdomen, and he started to lose his intestines. So the dad dove into the machine to save him, and he too got gutted. And he took the kid and he carried him to the farmhouse. I think the kid lived, but Colonel Robeson died.
Oh,
it was like a year or two after he retired. And you know who told me that was Tom Jones, Little Jones, General Jones. And it was awful, you know, but it was almost like, you know, I don't know what I'm, it was almost like, you know, the guy, he let this guy have another chance, this lieutenant, and you guys probably remember this story. The guy was, didn't make it through OCS the first time, went back the second time, and I think he was recycled in TBS, and I think, Major Huddleston, retired Colonel Huddleston, went to the CO of the basic school and said, "We can't let this guy go through. He sucks. He'll get people killed." He got relieved immediately in 3-2 as a platoon commander. He was working in a 3 shop. They fired him out of there. He was like the 4 Zulu, and his only job in CACS was to handle the road guards, which is pretty simple. You put two guys in a place, you know, and then you go pick him up. Well, he forgot one guy, Rother. You guys know the story.
Right.
And he died. And the reason why he was still there is because Colonel Robeson was a great guy. He was like a, you know, he was like, we've all seen him. It's kind of like, I picture him to be like Walt Gaskin, you know, or General Schultz, you know, who was Ollie North and Krulak's battalion commander when they were company and platoon commanders in Vietnam. Great guy, but he gave this guy a chance, and the guy ended up in Rother being killed. And so it was like, and he paid for it, and he should have paid for it. But it's just
I don't know. To me, the question is, are you culpable? Is there something you did as a commander, either in failing or in a climate you set? But by all accounts, the battalion, once it was notified, did everything they were supposed to do. And so, to me, then we get into the vanity of the commandant when it happens that I'm going to make this look good. To me, it was exactly what General Amos did when he went around and wire brushed the Marine Corps for what those scout snipers did. You know, and you're sitting there going, you know, and, you know, this is unacceptable, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, I got it, right?
Listen, Mac, I was in Bridgeport.
Well, hold on, hold on. Have you ever read With the Old Breed? This is not new, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. Well, let me just tell you, anecdotally, Bob Muse, remember Bob Muse?
Yep.
And Matt Duffy were both in 3-2, and they were friends of mine from the basic school. And they were in Eric Smith's class, believe it or not.
Wow.
Joe Latuel was in that class, and Dave Furness is in that class. And but anyway, they came up, and they're like, yeah, this motherfucker, we know he went UA, because no one had found him yet. You know, they left 29 Palms. That's what they used to do to those fucking guys in Second Marines. They sent them to CACs and then straight up to Bridgeport because they were there in California going through that shit for like 7-8 weeks at a time. They went straight from 29 Palms from CACs, tried to find Rother, missed their time to go to Vegas or whatever, and then went straight up to Bridgeport and did that. And then and Rother's body wasn't found until like a couple weeks after that.
Right.
You know? And it wasn't them who found it, obviously. Right. But, yeah, you know, it's a cautionary tale. But it's a tragic tale, too, because, Colonel Robeson was a good person and he was a good commander. And, I think you're right, Mac, about the vindictiveness there at that time. And let me tell you, I love Al Gray. Al Gray He made the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps is close to being destroyed by what happened after Vietnam, and between General Wilson, General Barrow, General Kelly, but especially General Gray,
right.
he led us through that glorious moment of vindication in Desert Storm, and I remember seeing the pictures of him driving around WPT Field in a Hummer, and the whole 2nd Marine Division out there going crazy, you know. It was a stirring thing. So these guys are great guys, but they're not perfect guys.
Right.
Either the guy who gets relieved because something horrible happens in his command and you should have known about, or the guy who relieves them and maybe does it unfairly because he's not looking at the whole story, you know?
Yeah, and sometimes...
Hey, can I...
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to add two things. One is that's a roundabout answer to that question about officers getting off sort of light sometimes because sometimes they don't. Sometimes we get screwed. And my second point is, any attempt to corral Jeff and I on some kind of bullshit, pardon the interruption time thing, it's never going to work, buddy. You just got to let us go. Because this is interesting.
Okay. Hey, Lynch, don't fuck with the format, okay? Stay in your lane. All right. Hey, we're gonna take a break. And then when we come back, I've got three more emails. So if you guys are you guys okay?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll take a break, about a 4-minute break, and then we'll come back. Jeff Kenney, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired, joins me. And Tim Lynch from Texas, retired Marine Corps major infantry type, joins us as well. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up.
And the clock didn't go off, so Lori gets a Navy achievement with a Combat V.
There you go. Nice job, Lori Kenney. Nice job. All right, more... All Marine Radio, I forgot about that. Coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the ReadBoard page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Ten minutes after nine here on a Wednesday. All right, Jeff Kenny and Tim Lynch continue with me. And here's an email question. Mac, I'm just curious, for each one of you three, excluding your commands, what was your favorite tour in the Marine Corps? All right, so excluding commands, what was your favorite tour in the Marine Corps? Tim?
IOC.
IOC?
Yeah. Being instructor at IOC was by far my favorite time, yeah.
Jeff?
Yeah, I have to say that too. I divide between officer and enlisted, but I'd say definitely as an officer, being an IOC instructor for sure.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. I would concur. I don't know if it was, I don't know if most guys would say that because it's such a good experience, but certainly the time that we were there, you know, maneuver warfare was, we were trying to figure out how to do that. And I was looking for something the other day and I found the the German troop leading manual from 1934 that I went up to the Library of Congress and copied. Exactly. We were trying to figure, like, how did Germans do this shit, man? Because this stuff, like, these people like Bill Lind are saying this shit, but there's no way the Germans did it like this. Like, oh, complete free play. Oh, like, seen Hogan's Heroes. I know something about the Germans, okay? And they didn't look like they did that shit. And then you go, you know, then you read the troop leading manual, and I need to find the exact paragraph and read it, because it says something like this: if you fritter away the combat power of the higher commander, you do so at the peril of your own existence, right? They didn't, but if there was something that you needed to do, you were expected to go do that. But it was not like it was without consequence, and it was
their definition of character was different than ours.
Yeah.
To them, a character was a guy who could make, who had the ability to make a decision with not 100% information, because that would mean it'd probably be irrelevant, that decision, waiting for all that time to find out everything, but yet not so soon that it would be foolhardy. Having that, and that was how they defined, you know, the character in combat for a combat leader.
So it's the ability to make,
you know,
to know the time to make the decision?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, decision, like, you remember General Allen used to have that, he used to draw that line, like a horizontal line. And he'd say, if you make a decision too close to the, and one end of it was no knowledge,
right,
and the other end of it was total knowledge. If you make it too close to the first line, you won't know shit and it'll just be stupid. If you make it too close to the other line, which is total knowledge, you'll be irrelevant because any opportunities you had will have already been passed. So, you know, having that, the character came where along that line, where is enough, and then if I wait any longer, I'm gonna lose my opportunity and going for it. You know, and it's and that takes guts because you don't know the answer. You know.
Interesting.
But the other thing was.
Hold on, hey, because when we think of character, we think it like as the quality and moral fiber as a human being.
Right.
Yeah. No. Okay. All right, Tim, go.
No. I was just going to say at the end of that course, you know, when those lieutenants did that movement to contact that turned into a deliberate night attack, and they're doing this shit with, I mean, they're just flowing and they're so fast, and just. I mean, it was remarkable in that we were able to articulate these decision-making things that you're talking about, but we also showed them, this is how you do it, this is how you get to this point. And by the time they got out of that course, they were damn good at that kind of stuff, which was better than when I left ISU as a student. I thought it was just a remarkable course.
They were doing Webb's Student Live Fire when I was a lieutenant. That was so good. Because, like what Timmy's saying, it let you know how long it takes to do stuff, how long it takes to set up that mortar, the mortar gun line, how long it takes to lay the guns in, how long it takes to move with all that gear over certain types of terrain. You know, so you could make quick plans based on enemy action that weren't just pie in the sky bullshit, a bunch of guys sitting around in a room. It was like, no shit, you had the reality of time and space, mud and snow. You know, heat and cold, all that shit.
Yeah, and you didn't see it until like other observers from other services came and watched. That's when you realize that, because I remember those old guys from the Army Infantry Officers School. They're like, the night ambush one. They're like, we couldn't do this. I mean, you know, they got claymores. I mean, we didn't go inspect that stuff. They went out, set it in, set the ambush. James came back without, you know, any safety check or any kind of weird crap like that. Claymores, you're shitting me. You know, it was like routine for them. It was a lot of fun to pull that off. And it was, you know, all the time we spent sitting out there talking amongst ourselves. It was just a hell of a lot of fun.
You know, Jeff, you mentioned that, you know, trying to get a lieutenant thrown out of the Marine Corps. That only happened to me one time, and it was when I was a class advisor. And I don't recall another incident of it, but the culminating incident was at the weapons platoon live fire. And the way this thing's orchestrated is you got machine gun section that gets tasked. You got the mortar section that gets tasked. and there's an assault section that gets tasked. And then typical of what you do is once you put it in motion, right, for instance, the machine gun section is supposed to move in tracks. They run into a minefield.
Right.
Right. And then the minefield is sewn in at a part of the road where the Amtraks can't go around it because there's trees.
Right.
And so this lieutenant who's in charge, who was the guy, and the reason he was in charge was because
because
we knew he was weak. And so he gets put in that position, and the trackers see these blue bodies, surface laid mines, right? And they look at him and they say,
"Logic to me,
right? Hey, sir, there's a minefield in front of us." And now he's looking at his watch, and he looks at them, and you know he pulls out his map and he looks and he says, and so what he's supposed to do is figure out, all right, we got to grab everything we can grab, and we got to bust our ass because we got to have rounds on target at this time. This may kill us, but we're going. We're Marines, right? Let's go. Let's do this shit. So anyway, he decides, and you can hear the trumpets playing in his head. Drive through the minefield. I'll take responsibility for this. And the sergeant says,
"I remember this,
sir. I'm not doing it." And he says, "What are you doing? You're going to disobey an order?" And he's like, "Sir, I'm not going to get my Marines killed driving over a minefield. That's crazy." And they had an argument. And then, you know, and you're watching it because you know what's, you know, this is the friction point. And you're waiting to see what they do. And you're looking at your watch because you want to go home and eat dinner tonight. So we got to get rounds on target. And you're watching this and you're like, "You got to be shitting me." And so we boarded the guy and we dropped him from the infantry officer course. I don't want to say because it was comm school was on, was it comm school was on base in Quantico for officers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to say he went over and he was a communicator. Anyway, it's a sad story. His brother went to West Point. He was killed in a car accident in Germany. He joined the Marine Corps with all the best intentions, but you know, he had problems making decisions. And he listened to the wrong voices in his head, and you could hear like almost when he said that, like the sword comes out.
Right.
Charge, men! I'll take responsibility. Like.
Whoa. Yeah, Dave had a similar thing when he was a class advisor, and his guy ended up being our logistics officer for the 15th MU. He was a pretty good logistics officer, though.
Oh, well, you know what? That's good then. That's good because there's some people that aren't cut out for it. And I'll never forget in the board, it was guys that we knew, right, from the basic school. Mm-hmm. But they were all senior to us. We were captains, and they were lieutenant colonels and stuff like that. And it was Major Allen and I that went in front of them. And, you know, John Allen, pretty well spoken, pretty, at the time, even then, extremely well thought of. And they knew both of us from the work we did. And it was, I thought, done, a guy named Edelman, Lieutenant Colonel by the name of Edelman.
Oh, yeah.
Right? He was just a good salt of the earth dude, right?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget what he said. He said, "I know these guys. They would not come here except for their genuine concern. And we have to figure out what is best for the Marine Corps and what is best for this lieutenant. But I accept them at their word, and I know them. And so, to me, it's not even an issue. What are we going to do?"
Remember Jason Rother.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you know, again, just that kind of gross. And then you kind of flip that to people that won't do the right thing in command of a ship driving at 20 knots at night, and then somebody's baby dies over it. And I can't imagine being those families reading. I don't know if I could have read that shit, because if I'd have read that shit, I'd have gone looking for somebody.
Shit, yeah.
And it's just, that's how disgusting it is. Another email. "Hey, Mac, same guy. Kenny said I'd divide it between officer and enlisted. What was his favorite tour as an enlisted Marine?" That's interesting.
Yeah, my embassy tour in Tehran, Iran. Because a lot of the same reasons IOC was so good as an officer. It was the combination of personalities we had when I was there from 76 to 78. It was just and our boss, who the first boss got relieved after a month. And the guy who came in afterwards, he's the reason I stayed in the Marine Corps, Gunny. Vietnam guy with a lot of time in Vietnam. So yeah, that was good.
Here's another one. You guys are pretty hard on the Navy. Do you all think this is simply a Seventh Fleet issue, or do you think this is Navy-wide issue?
Navy-wide.
Tim?
Navy-wide. The Navy's been the leading ship commanders down in Norfolk at a rate of about, I don't know, 10 a year for years now. And I don't know what's going on there. I think it's more girl stuff, but it got real problems. I mean, real problems.
Yeah, the Navy has gone kind of like Jeff's like restraining himself right now. The Navy is like they wear uniforms, but they're kind of really civilians, you know. And
best you can say is the Air Force is worse.
Yeah, yeah. My dad said that you don't got to be great; just look better than the person you're standing next
to. Right.
So the moral of the story is: be fucking careful about who you stand next to. Okay.
Yeah.
And so
you want to look thin, hang out with fat people.
Exactly. So I'll tell you a story. When I was a lieutenant, I was the XO of the Marine Detachment on the Ranger. So we're at sea forever. We had to go to Team Spirit in March of 87 because the scow known as the USS Midway was having they put these blisters on the Midway because the Midway was keeled to have a straight flight deck. That's how old the son of a bitch is.
Yeah.
They put an angled flight deck, and it had this what? It was like a 7 degrees to the starboard side list on the ship. And then they said, yeah, the Menses in the Navy said, the engineer said, hey, if we put these blisters on the other side of the ship, they'll act as a counterbalance, and this will be able to, you know, drive straight. Like, the ship will be crooked, but the flight deck will be straight. Like, okay, somebody thought that was a good idea. So what happened was it would the ship, instead of rolling, it would snap. And so you'd have an aircraft coming in to land, and then the deck would snap one way or the other, and it would crush the landing gear of the aircraft. Well,
Shit,
the aviators can't have that because,
no way.
Yeah, it's like, it's okay for a Lance Corporal to get smoked, but an aviator, for us to lose an aviator, oh my God, like it's a total meltdown if an aviator dies. Don't ask me why the exchange rate isn't equal, but I'm just here to tell you, it ain't. So anyway, we get told, hey, you got to go to Midway. Well, wait, we're deploying in June and it's March. Yeah, we know. Shut up and color. Okay, so we go there. Then we turn around and we go out to the North Arabian Sea. So I get an invitation to go dine with the admiral, right, of our battle group, Admiral Tony Less. Okay, so I put on my deltas or whatever I put on, and I go up to the admiral's mess, right? And they've got the good food up there, man. They've got the tablecloths and the nice silverware. I mean, it's like nice eating. So you have Admiral Less and you have his staff. And then you had, like, the Commodore of the Destroyer Squadron.
Right.
Right? So he's there. So we're sitting. Yeah, Dezron. And he's the Commodore, right? He's a Black Shoe Navy guy. So we're sitting at dinner. And, you know, you get raised as a Marine officer. Hey, if you got a question, you know, don't be afraid to ask it, right? If the general or the admiral asks you, let it rip. So we're sitting at dinner and blah, 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 blah. And so he says, Lieutenant McNamara, what have you think? You know, you've been on the Ranger for how long? I said, so I've been on the Ranger for over a year. And he said, well, that's long enough. He said, got any observations about the Navy, our junior officers? And I said, I do, sir. I think that, I think it's embarrassing, the stuff that I see from, your ensigns and your JGs. And I said, and I don't say that to insult anybody. I say that to ask you.
But I don't say it to compliment him either.
And the Commodore went stiff in his chair. Bing! And I said, we have a school called the Basic School that we all go to for 5 months. And it's like an incubator for us. We learn leadership. We learn about, we do all these different things. We learn which hand to salute with. And we understand that stuff. And
I'm not to be a broke dick.
Exactly. And so then we go to our follow-on school. But the product, when we come to the fleet, we're ready to contribute. What I see is you have junior officers. They're afraid. The chiefs run the son of a bitch. And the junior officers are like, whatever. They're like ridiculed. And I said, I don't, like, that doesn't make sense to me. And, you know, he said, well, that's an interesting observation. You know, I've heard about the base school, but I don't really understand it. And, you know, I'd be curious to know more about it because it sounds like an idea that maybe the Navy should embrace. And the Commodore looks at me and he says, well, Lieutenant, let me tell you something. If you want to see leadership in the Navy, you need to come to see the Black Shoe Navy. All right, not this black and brown shoes stuff that goes on an aircraft carrier. So when you're available, I'll be happy, right, to host you for, you know, a day or two on a destroyer, on a frigate, and you can see the Black Shoe Navy at work out here in what we do because we do it the right way. And I was like, ooh,
oh,
shit.
Man.
Yeah. And I was like, but that was 1987.
Were you one of those guys on the barge, man, in the Gulf? did I hear that?
No.
You were one of those guys, like, remember we were like, remember we had guys out there, I remember when I first got to the fleet, we had guys that were putting in the Gulf on barges and stuff. I thought you were one of them.
No. We blew up a bunch of those, the oil rigs and shit like that. And on that, I mean, honestly, carriers at that time did not go into the Persian Gulf because you had to go through the Straits of Hormuz. And it's too dangerous. The Iranians would smoke your ass. And so we stayed, you know, on what's known as Gonzo Station there in the North Arabian Sea. And we caught the Iranians laying mines in international waters. And I'll never forget, you're sitting there and listening, and they're talking to a helicopter. They're talking to the CIC that's controlling the helicopter, wherever the hell that was. And they were watching him. It was one of those special helicopters, right? They're watching him with night vision shit, and they're like, we confirm they are laying mines in international waters. There's no doubt in our mind. There's at least six in the water right now. And they're pushing them off an LCU, which it's a really big landing craft,
right?
So the ship that they were talking to says, stand by. And so you know what they did was they got on the phone, right? And they called the Pentagon. Pentagon wakes up the Secretary of Defense or some shit, because we weren't at war at that time. What do we do? But the pilot didn't wait. He said, right, that they shot the LCU because somebody stood up and looked at them in a menacing manner.
Poof.
And then the same thing happened with the lifeboat that they were hovering near, you know, relatively near for a helicopter, the lifeboat, and another guy stood up in a menacing manner, so they smoked the lifeboat. And I remember then that the battle group sailed every frigate and destroyer through the Straits of Hormuz that night, and Admiral S. came on the 1MC, and he said, hey, this is Admiral S. And everybody's like, oh, shit, he never talks. We have a chance to get in a shooting war tonight. We're going to drive, like, all nine of our frigates and destroyers right through the Straits of Hormuz. They're going to go up there. They're going to blow the shit out of all those oil platforms and some of the other things they're using to do this shit. And so if they light off a radar tonight, it's going away. So, get some rest, get ready to go, we're going to be at it for a while. And you were like, shit!
That's neat, man.
It was, and they went, those, I don't know if you remember the videos, but those destroyers just stood off those platforms and they blew the shit out of them with their 5-inch guns, yada, yada, yada. And, the Navy, I mean, they were like all fired up. But the Navy, they were no bullshit back then.
Right.
And so, I don't know, it's not like that anymore. Yeah. And it's been going on forever.
That's also some strategic level decision making happened real quick. That was really, really good. We don't seem to do that anymore either. But I love hearing stories like that.
Yeah, it was motivating. Yeah, and I'd see that destroyer squad, that Desron Commodore, every once in a while up in the blue tile area, because the Navy, where the Admiral hangs out, has this stuff called the blue tile. Most of the tile on the ship is green. Okay, and there's red tile. You're not supposed to be there. That's around nuclear spaces where the Marines are, and you don't want any part of that shit. And then there's blue tile where the Admiral lives. Okay, guess who cleans the blue tile? The Marines.
All right. Yeah.
Right?
The Marines are there, like my uncles used to tell me, and my dad. The Marines are on the big ships to keep the sailors from throwing the CO off the boat.
That's right. That's the way it was. We're also there to clean up the areas that he lived because the Navy doesn't clean like we clean.
Right.
Yeah.
And we would have Marines on a nightly basis up there with cups of wax and sponges. That's what we did. But it was pretty cool. But I'd see that. I'd
they
be,
shoot, and they drink, and they clean shitters.
Exactly. What they do. They don't do a lot. They don't do a lot, but what they do pretty well. But I'd be up there shooting the shit with my Marines as they're waxing floors up there, and that Desron commander would come by. And he'd like, "Hey, Lieutenant, how's it going? When are you coming to see me?" I said, "Hey, sir, when I get some time, I looked at him, I said, "Sir, I'd really love to. I'm an infantry officer by trade. I'd love to see how you guys do it." And then, you know, when he got to, when he'd get me aside, he'd say, "Hey, look, this brown shoe Navy is poisoning the Navy. This aviator shit," he said,
yeah,
"it's not what I grew up with." And so you figure that if he was a Commodore, so what is that? That's an 06 billet.
That's the captain, yeah.
Right. And so he would have come in, let's say he's at, what, 20, how many years? 22
yeah,
years. So he comes into the Navy in 1965.
Yeah, that's the Maddox and the fucking Hulk.
Right. Right, so they were pretty rough, you know, the Navy pretty tough organization. Here's another email. What do you guys think about us working with the Brits in the South China Sea? Max made a few comments about it, so I don't want to hit the mute button on you, Matt, because I know you don't even probably have one, but I'm curious about what Tim and Jeff think. Thoughts, boys?
I got to call this a bitch working there, but I'd rather see the Japanese and the Filipino and the South Korean maybe work with it,
frankly. I don't know how capable the Brits are anymore. They're always cutting the shit out of their defense budget, so I just don't know what good they are. I mean, they're good people, but I, you know, other than helping you have fist fights in Hong Kong, yeah. What's that one bar we always go to there?
What is it? The Pitch, Finch. The Finch. The Bear and the Finch or something?
Yes,
like that?
The Bear and the Bull or something.
Yeah,
like
Bear
that.
And the Finch. Yeah.
Anyways, but, yeah, the...
Why do we all know the same bar in Hong Kong? What the hell?
But the, I
can't think the new guys, but when we were last in Hong Kong, we won the rugby game. Beat the Brits.
That means they really went. Either we went up or they went down, because that's their fucking bailiwick, man.
Yeah, that's somebody going to get drunk that night.
We were just bigger than that. The Australians kicked their ass. It didn't matter with them, but with the Brits, we just still kicked their ass.
They're little guys. No, you know what? I think the British presence is more symbolic than it is real, but what I think is, what I hope is, you know, the Japanese see that and say, "Hey, we want to be involved next time." The Australians see it and we want to be involved next time. Because let me tell you, the only way the tide changes, it can't be the U.S. confronting China. I mean, it could be in the South China Sea. It needs to be South Korea, Japan, Australia, and the Brits too, if they want to at least pretend that they're still a global power in some way, shape, or form. They should be out there too. You know, and so to me, that's the way it should be. And at some point, China will begin to get the message. But it's old and fucked up that it's the United States. We're the only nation that cares about, you know, international law and navigation of the seas. Come on, that's bullshit.
Right.
Anyway, it could be me. I could be wrong, but I'm not. Mac, here's another one. Mac, ask them your question about your conundrum. Oh. This is funny, and this is a good question, too. Thank you. Here's my conundrum. I'm going to I have an hour to present post-traumatic winning at the General Officer Symposium next week in Quantico. Now, in that audience will be a number of my friends.
Right.
The post-traumatic winning is like a three-hour event. I've got about 30 minutes to actually present the thing, and of that 30, I'll probably have about 19 minutes of it. Okay. Should I take at least a minute or two to wire brush a few of my friends? Because this kind of opportunity doesn't happen.
And in absolutely.
And in particular,
you're talking about Freddie. You're talking about Dave. Yes.
In particular.
You have to.
My platoon sergeant from OCS is now Major General Timberlake. Should I point out that, hey, my name has never been McNarama, okay? Right? And two, I don't think fuck you, McNarama, is an appropriate greeting responding to good morning, platoon sergeant, right? Yeah. And I don't think you understand the UCMJ because you accused me of treason for bad-mouthing Major Tracy, our company commander. I still think that's out of line. So what say you, Jeff? Should I get the wire brush out a little bit?
Craig Timberlake needs that from you. I was told by Paul Kennedy and Dave Furness that you'd be okay with it. So
I was gonna say you can't stop at Timberlake. Timberlake is just where you start.
Right.
You got a few more in there too.
Are you kidding me?
A few more. Come on.
I know.
Come on.
I know. I know so many. Like Mike Groen, right? He's an Intel guy.
You got Papa Jewel stories. I know you do.
No, I can't even go near him. He's too toxic.
That's right. You can't tell a Freddy story. You can't. Well, all right. We're on the radio, so forget.
Exactly. It's like some people are too toxic. He's toxic masculinity, okay? So I can't even go near him. But a guy like Mike Groen never said anything that General Mattis didn't say, got it, Mike. Mike could have said, hey, sir, Martians came down last night in Ramadi. They shit all over the mosque, the blue mosque in Ramadi. And then he would have looked at him and goes, got it, Mike. Anything else about that? No, sir. And then other guys could say, right, sir. The moon is, the sun is coming up in the east today. It will set in the west. How do you know that? And you're like, oh shit, yeah. I mean, and there's so many of those guys that I know. So I was musing about that in the first hour, but I don't have a lot of time, and I've got to hit my times because they don't mess around in the General Officer Symposium, evidently, which is normally not how I do it, but. Can you pass up that many targets? And they're going to be there with their wives, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. That's tough decision. But you at least got to hit Timberlake.
Yeah.
McNarama. That's hysterical.
McNarama. Yeah, hey, listen to this. You want to hear a funny OCS story? So we're cleaning rifles. And so, we're weapons cleaning time. So we've got a wall lock, a foot locker sitting there. There's a towel over it, right? And, you got your rifle, and there's like four guys around this thing, and you're huddled together, and you're talking, and cleaning your rifle. My back is to the foot lockers, which is a mistake, okay? I didn't know that at the time. So what does Timberlake do? He walks in and he goes down the alley, which is a space between the wall lockers, the racks, and the wall that is deliberately put there so they can sneak up on you. Exactly. So this is how diabolical the whole fucking thing is. So he sneaks up and we're talking, and I have my head down cleaning my bolt or something like that of my rifle. And I say, and our company commander was Major Tracy. Yeah, I'm fucking Major Tracy. Did you hear that shit he was talking? Right? And I'm looking at my bolt, and none of my and I said something funny, and I'm a funny guy, right? And
yeah.
And nobody laughs. And I look, and I look up, and it looks like they've seen the devil incarnate themselves, and everybody's face is blank, and they're staring at their weapon, and I look, and I go, oh fuck, and he fucking yells at me. McNarama, get the fuck in the platoon commander's office, right? Do you know what? And he starts telling me about committing treason. And so then I run, now you run like an idiot. You run and you pound on his hatch. And here's Tom Rankin. Bam, bam, bam. And he's like trying to do something. And all of a sudden, now he's being bothered. What? Sir, the candidate was instructed to report to the platoon commander. report. So I go in, I stand in front of his desk, and candidate McNamara reported to Platoon Commander Zorg, "What did you do?" The candidate was cleaning his gun, and he has a clipboard, and he got his back to me, right? The candidate was cleaning his gun, and he turns around, and he says, "Who authorized you to bring a naval gun into my fucking squad bay?" And with that, Timberlake comes around the corner, and as Rankin throws a clipboard at me, and, you know, most of the time they're not accurate, this one was coming, like, right at the bridge of my nose. So I moved my head, which means I broke the position of attention, which technically Timberlake turns into assault, and an assault on Captain Rankin. And Timberlake's like,
first you call him a traitor, then you attacked him.
Holy exactly. So you're like, my God. Mr. Big Shot, want to be a Marine.
That's how you became the honor man on OCS.
I wasn't even close, man. I was in the third squad of third platoon. Oh, my God. But, yeah, Timberlake.
At least, you know, if he didn't like you, he wouldn't have paid so much attention to you. So, you know, there's always that, right?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
He saw something in you.
Yeah, and then, you know what? He hopped in the next OCS class and went through and got commissioned, and then his... obviously had a very, very good career. Just gave up 3rd Marine Division as a CG. So, yeah, Craig Timberlake. How do you know him, Jeff?
I'm trying to remember now. I think I ran into him, in 2nd Marine Division, but I'm not sure. I just somehow I knew him, you know. I don't know him real good. He's on one of the boards where I got promoted. Not one of the ones where I got passed.
So he's good.
So I automatically like him.
Timberlake and I think Ron Clark, we got sent to this bullshit Stars to Bars conference in Barstow that the Army put on. So there's like a bunch of Air Force nurses there and some light infantry guys from Ward and us. And they just took us through. It was like a three days of drinking is essentially what it was.
Rob almost every day.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Ask him about that Stars to Bars. He had quite the adventure before he was ready. He could do that kind of thing.
Yeah, beyond 12th District when we're talking. You know?
Is that right?
Yeah, well, because, you know, he was a recruiting CO. We were all recruiting COs at the same time. So, you know.
He was San Diego, yeah.
He talks about how it was a pain in the ass being there with General Yulee, you know, and that shit. You know?
Oh, he's supervising you. General Furness, our friend Dave, he made a joke about still having nightmares about trying to find a female Hispanic oboe player in Central California. Do you guys have any examples of being on recruiting duty and trying to fill band quotas?
No, I mean, we did that shit. Pittsburgh has like a lot of kids who do that shit there in Pittsburgh itself. So we didn't, you know, whenever we got one of those, you trade them with other guys, Mac. You know, like I think Tim has by some ledger main of fate, he ends up with two clarinet players. And I never did this actually with Tim, but I got a guy who plays like the drums real good or something, or, you know, trombone. You can. That's how people work that shit out. Because admissions are, you know, both for lawyers and for musicians are kind of unreasonable. No rhyme or reason, you know.
Yeah.
Like if you're in RS New York, you go to the guys who flunk out of Juilliard, and you mine them. You know what I mean? You mine them for that type of shit.
Hey, I got a deal for you. I did not realize that the band was that big of a deal.
Yeah. It wasn't that.
Oh, yeah. I
was just worried about putting enlisted guys in. That's how shitty we were in Pittsburgh when I got there, you know? The only thing that keep me from not, you know, I could come up with a lawyer, I could come up with a fucking clarinet player, but I need a raw fucking numbers, you know, to make it.
Hey, recruiting's a big deal, and recruiting's a big deal. If you're on your way in the Marine Corps, you will go through that crucible. There's not too many people that become successful in the Marine Corps where you don't, as a captain major, see them as an RSCO.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's
nah, My biggest problem was I had all of Utah and Montana and Idaho and slices in Nevada and all that, but was African American Rossi finding
right. That would be awful for you.
Because
you had a lot of windshield.
I was driving 14, 15 hours a day sometimes. I was a driving fool. But I found a kid down in St. George, Utah, but he was a white kid. His dad was a Mormon missionary and hooked up with some woman in South Africa and they had a baby but he got invited back home finally. So, the kid was born in Africa though.
I sent
that one in as an African American Rossi candidate. I remember that. And I was sitting there yelling, I'm like, he was born in Africa. There's lots of people, all colors, all shapes and sizes. Come on, man. That died quickly.
When y'all
recruiting, you got to sell, man. I was closing that deal. I'm like, no, this is it. I got my tenure. Even the kid's dad wasn't too down with it either. He goes, I don't know about this. But he's a Mormon guy. He's kind of on the up and up.
final question of the day is the general question. What's on your mind about either the Marine Corps, a world event, or something that I haven't asked you about today, Jeff?
Well, I guess the wall. Are we gonna open the government up so that, you know, I mean we need that. Not only do we need the wall, but I need to get a job down there somewhere. I see me seeing Tim living in McAllen, Texas, there helping to defend America against the illegal people. But
yeah, I don't know.
I don't really have any.
The Democrats seem to be content with choke on it and keep the government shut, and the government will open when we break you and you capitulate. So
the party of infanticide and pederasts.
All right, Tim. Anything I haven't asked you that's in your mind, that's on your head and on your mind?
No, not really. I was prepared for a geopolitical discussion on what I would do if I came the day in Afghanistan, but we can save that for another time.
Right.
Things are good. Government shut down. Happy.
I'll tell you what. We'll do that next week.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
All right, guys. Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you, Max. Take care, Timmy.
Always a pleasure, brother.
All right. There you have it. Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny. Here on a Wednesday edition of Ballmarine Radio. We're going to take one more break. We'll come back. We'll wind things up. Don't touch that dial. More Ballmarine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is that you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue, but it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage, nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
.55 on a Wednesday. Let me tell you the problems, the social problems, kind of interesting, that the military encounters, right? We have a society that parents without consequences. We have a school system that educates without consequences, right? And in that whole, a common thread that runs through both the parenting and the schools is your feelings are really, really, really important. How you feel is really important, right? And we will excuse behavior based on your feelings. The military has been incredibly affected, obviously, by the human capital it gets and where they come from and their worldview. And so
trying to move their cheese. You know, before, you know, when you came in, right? Up was up, down was down. Your feelings weren't important. You were going to join something bigger than yourself. And it's not that way anymore. You know, shared values? Not really. You know, I come from a culture that cares about my feelings into a culture that doesn't seem to care about my feelings too much. How does that work? I mean, and it looked cool in the advertisement, but the life that I lead? Yeah, I don't, like, what is this about? And, you know, is there an emphasis on overcoming adversity in their childhood? No, they don't, I mean, they don't play and compete the same way that we did. You don't play dodgeball anymore, for God's sakes, because somebody's going to get their feelings hurt. So it's an interesting thing. And when you have services, and I'll tell you what, the Air Force and the Navy are, you know, I mean, as a Marine, you would be around them and you would be amazed at the things that you saw. Like, holy smokes, man. That's straight up crazy stuff. And so how do you defend the nation if you can't, if the standards of discipline don't apply? That we're going to be civilians, but we're still going to do this stuff, and we're all going to be nice to you. I don't know that it works. And so the question is, how do you bring today's young people who don't know adversity and who don't know discipline, and they don't know it through either parenting or their schools, how do you make them disciplined and not be afraid of adversity? It's no small challenge. It's no small challenge. And I think, you know, you're watching the Navy go through it. You know? Now, I mean, in theory, you know, what you do is you woo them to that. You know? You transition them in such a way, and you bring them into your tribe, and you change their environment. And by doing that, you have a positive impact on their life. I mean, and all you're doing really is... I mean, in my opinion, now people can differ, you know, with my opinion, but all you're doing is you are, you're teaching them a better way, right? A way that if you're almost guaranteeing, if you embrace this, you'll be a better human being because you can't be successful without discipline, right? And adversity, while it may be a pain in the ass, is like friction. Friction in combat is all the little things that go wrong. Well, adversity in life is all the little things that go wrong. So those things are kind of the same thing. And if you're not taught that, yeah, adversity is a chance for you to show that what you're made out of. So if you're not taught that, then how do you, when adversity shows up, what do you do? Will your knees buckle? What happens? So... anyhow, that'll do it on a Wednesday. If you're just joining us, we'll go ahead and we'll check out the news here today. And then joining us for a couple hours today are the Bobbsey twins, Jeff Kenny and Tim Lynch. So you'll hear them, and we kind of go around the barber pole and talk about a whole bunch of incidents. We talk about the bombing in Manbij, Syria. Did that surprise anybody? Jeff said that he saw an open source reporting that was actually a vehicle bomb, not a suicide bomber, that was parked outside the restaurant. You know what? Which makes sense to me. Because you could park a car there for a couple of days and not move it. As long as it attracts anybody's attention, all you're doing is waiting for a target. Hopefully it doesn't get towed on street cleaning day. And the restaurant owner doesn't get suspicious because you have some kind of wire sticking out of it. So that's what's coming up. Tomorrow... Sergeant Major of the 10th Marine Regiment is supposed to join us. Sergeant Major Jake Reef. So he was a part of post-traumatic winning, so we'll get his thoughts on that. As well as we'll talk to him about that issue, transitioning America's young people, and not just through boot camp, but as Mike said the other day, the change takes longer than the 13 weeks of boot camp and then School of Infantry and then whatever else you go to in life. I mean, it's a huge change in your lifestyle. So we'll talk to him about that and America's young people, see what he has to say. My instinct has always been, right, with good leadership that encourages them at the appropriate time, that boots them in the ass, that knows them, they'll do anything. Problem is, do we have enough leaders like that? So on a Wednesday, have a great afternoon. All Marine Radio, over and out.